Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Today, we're talking about the limits of shaping, and this episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Becoming a Skyway community member makes it easier to navigate the complicated world of government contracting because you gain context from Skyway's team of former contracting officers. As a member, you get unlimited access to the Ask a Contracting Officer forum and hundreds of articles, webinars, and training modules. Go to skywaymember.com to get started with a personal membership, because without it, you're likely missing opportunities that you don't see. Okay, let's get started with our conversation about the limits of shaping. We had earlier podcasts that were sort of a Q&A. We took questions from listeners and answered them through the podcast. Today, we're reaching into that bag again, this time not just listeners, but listeners who are members of the Skyway community.
Yeah, one of our members, one of our customers, posted a question in our Ask a Contracting Officer forum, which is inside the Skyway community. It's a forum where customers can post questions and then get answers from our whole team of COs. It's a great tool because there's often a different answer from each of our team members. This question was no different. Shelly had answered it, and I answered it in the forum. We put our input on there and posted those over the weekend, actually. But I thought it would be cool for you and I to go through the same question to get your perspective on it in this forum. So that way, our customers also get direct access to podcast content. That's maybe the way to say that.
Okay. What's the question?
So the question is, several of the podcasts have suggested that the name of the game is to develop relationships with program offices and contracting officers so that you can be in a position to help craft the statement of work prior to submission. What are the limits to that? If I help someone craft the statement of work, can that disqualify us from participating in the ultimate procurement?
Okay. Before we get into podcast opinions on that question, let's stop and say thanks.
I say thanks this time to Greg Stojakovic. I hope I didn't butcher that. He's a contract specialist at the Defense Contract Management Agency, or the DCMA that we reference on the podcast. He's in the Richmond, Virginia area, and Greg consistently likes and shares our content and our episodes on LinkedIn. And the best way for people to find this information that we're giving away for free is for people to like and share it.
Thanks, Greg. Okay, let's get back to the question and break it down into pieces. One of the thoughts that I get out of the question is, how much shaping of the statement of work or the acquisition can a company do without being disqualified from bidding?
And there are multiple ways to answer this. The short answer is yes. They can disqualify you if you go over the line. But there is a huge gulf between shaping the requirement and getting disqualified from the eventual competition.
I'd actually call it a wall between when you're shaping and things that will get you disqualified. We'll talk about that in a minute.
And another piece of this is that the question specifically mentions the statement of work. That's only part of the acquisition. It's one piece of what the overall acquisition strategy will be. So the communication is a big part of this, and it's as much art as it is science. So understanding where that statement of work fits into the overall acquisition is part of the answer.
And shaping is not writing or crafting the statement of work, as the question says. Industry is either on one side or the other side of a wall that divides when you're writing and when you're shaping.
And that wall is clearly defined in the FAR.
Is there a line that contractors shouldn't cross between shaping and writing? You said, yes, they can disqualify you in answer to the question. In reality, you shouldn't be able to cross the line. That's why I said it's a wall. It depends on which side you're on. Are you on the government side supporting the government, or are you bidding on an RFP? If you're on both, that's where it's an issue.
Regardless, either you're helping to write the RFP, you're helping to write the statement of work and write the eventual competition, or you're responding to it. That's that wall. You're on one side or the other of that wall.
Right. So if you're bidding, you're shaping. If you're a CETA, if you're on the systems engineering and technical assistance side or on the government side of it, then you're writing or at least contributing to the requirement.
Yeah, the biggest indicator to me, which side you're on, if you're being paid to write the statement of work, you're on that side of the wall. Pretty clear. Because then you can be disqualified because you have access to information. And you're helping to, you're not just influencing it, you're actually creating it, right? If they didn't pay you to write the statement of work, but they listened to you, then there's little risk of disqualification because you're throwing things over the wall, but they're deciding whether or not to actually do anything with them. When I was a CEO, I was in an industry day for some software development for a big system that we had. And one of the vendors who wanted to propose their solution, they were shaping, right? That's what they were trying to do. But I realized that they were actually CETA support. They were actually, that part of their company was supporting the development side, like actually writing the statement of work for this requirement. And I said, hey, by the way, you know you can't bid on this. It was like it's like a fart in church. They're right. Like, what do you mean? They the two sides of that company weren't talking to each other. And it would, I didn't make any friends that day.
But they should have known. They should have known. We'll get into that too. We've talked about this wall, but are there limits to shaping? How do you share information with the government without crossing this imaginary line or annoying someone at a minimum?
And I guess that's where the line is. It's the threshold of pain for how much the government wants to, how many emails they want to get from you about it.
Right. From a shaping perspective on the industry side, the limit is shape as much as you can. The threshold is really that government annoyance level, not your number of attempts to shape. So the question is, how do you share information without crossing the line or annoying someone?
Right. And the definition of annoyance, that's subjective. You know, that's the relationship part. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to shoehorn your solution into the government's requirement or stretch the government's requirement so that it's big enough that your solution fits it. That's shaping. I mean, conferences are famous for this. I was at a conference when I worked with SOCOM, and they have all kinds of cool toys that people make for special operations. And we had a tactical helmet. And so there was the requirement we had for this was, let's say it was, you know, like a really tricked out Chevy is the equivalent, right? But the product that one of the vendors had on the floor was a Lamborghini. And while it was cool, the level of coolness was just over the head of myself, because I'm not a technical guy. For that matter, it was over the head of the program manager because he's like, I can't justify needing, you know, a Lamborghini. And because it was too cool, we couldn't stretch the requirement to fit their product. How cool it was really irrelevant because it was more than we could ever justify.
From the other side, if the requirement is currently written for the Lamborghini and you have the tricked out Chevy and you don't think the government really needs a Lamborghini, you're trying to shape them down to the tricked out Chevy that you're selling. And at the same time, your competitor with the Lamborghini is trying to make sure that the requirement stays at the Lamborghini level.
Right. And if the requirement ends up being the tricked out Chevy and that Chevy company wins, or if it ends up being the Lamborghini and the Lamborghini wins, neither of those gets them disqualified. Going back to the basis of this question, right. That's shaping. That's the communication that should be happening. It's kind of the essence of the 80-20 rule, you know, the 80% relationship, 20% process, or is it 20% process and 80% relationship? Relationships are a part of the decision, and they can be a big part of the decision, but you got to know how much of the decision.
But there's always a portion of both in every decision. There's always some relationship and some process in there. One way to tell how much process is going to rule the government's decisions here is how much of the decision is made by the contracting officer and how much is not. Because contracting officers are paid to handle the process.
Yeah, exactly. The user, the requirements person, the program manager, they don't care about the process. They want the stuff. They would love to just award based on 100% relationship. And so, yeah, the contracting officer is more concerned about the process. And a key factor here, as we talked about in previous episodes, oftentimes the source selection authority is the contracting officer. So there is going to be some process. That's why you can't shake process out of the entire acquisition.
That's how you know if the contracting officer is the source selection authority, they're going to follow the process.
Because they're signing it.
Another thing that impacts the power of relationships is what time zone you're in. If you've crossed the threshold to the RFP zone where the final RFP has been released, then it's all process. Your opportunities to shape and use the relationship power are done for now.
Yep, that window has closed.
The question got us talking about, can you cross a line and shape too much and disqualify yourself? And what we said is, you really can't. Where you can get disqualified is when you cross the wall between being on the government side, being paid by the government to develop requirements or develop an acquisition, and bidding on that acquisition. And this gets us to FAR time. If you look in FAR Part 9, 9.5 specifically, It talks about what contractors can and cannot do as CETAs, as support contractors.
And the general rule is 9.505-1 through -4. It prescribes limitations on contracting as a means of avoiding, neutralizing, and mitigating conflicts of interest. And here's the thinking job. Ready for this? Each individual contracting situation should be examined on the basis of its particular facts and the nature of the proposed contract. And this is my favorite part. I highlighted it in red. The exercise of common sense, good judgment, and sound discretion is required in both the decision on whether a significant potential conflict exists and, if it does, the development of an appropriate means for resolving it. In other words, that wall is explicitly described right here in the FAR. It's really obvious.
Can you be disqualified? Yes, only if you're crossing that wall. The two underlying principles that the FAR is aiming to prevent are the existence of conflicting roles that might bias a contractor's judgment. So again, you're on one side of the wall as a CETA, where you're helping the government write a statement of work, and you're on the other side of the wall, that same company is going to bid on that work. That is the existence of conflicting roles. The other principle is preventing unfair competitive advantage. So if you're on the CETA side, you're going to have access to information that is not public knowledge yet, and therefore have an unfair competitive advantage. But that's not specifically what we're talking about today.
But it shows where the bumpers are.
I touched on the time zones before. Where are we? We're in the acquisition time zones here. This is the first two time zones, the requirement zone and the market research zone. This is before the final RFP has been released, when contractors are trying to shape requirements so they can win. It also shows up in the execution time zones and the recompete zone, like we talked about before. If the government has a continuing requirement and is going to have a competition, the recompete zone actually becomes the requirement zone of the market research zone for the next competition.
And for details on all the time zones, the acquisition time zones are in episode 3, and the execution time zones are in episode 84.
Let's get back and focus on why this matters. We're talking about industry folks. Are you helping to shape the statement of work, or are you writing the statement of work? Where's the line?
And on the government side, are you getting input to develop the statement of work, or are you actually getting help writing it? I mean, that's the wall. It's really obvious.
Shaping is providing input to the government. It's collaborating on the state of the possible. What can industry actually do? It's answering questions. It's asking questions. It's really attempting to provide influence and understanding that may be ignored by the government. Sometimes it should be ignored by the government. But ultimately, shaping is how you win. You're trying to influence the request for proposals to reflect the strengths of your solution over your competitors' solutions.
And on the government side, writing is just what it sounds like. If you're helping to write the actual RFP, if you're developing the requirement and documenting it and building the actual solicitation, because you get to see behind the curtain. I mean, you're seeing how the whole process is developed.
That's the unfair competitive advantage.
Correct. And again, go back to FAR 9.505 and read through that list. If that's what you do, then you're on the CETA side of the wall.
So back to that prime indicator. If you're being paid by the government, you're likely writing. If you're a CETA or the lead system integrator, you're getting paid by the government to define, refine requirements and write acquisition strategies. You can't also bid to provide those products or services. When I was on the government side, I didn't really understand that shaping isn't necessarily evil.
It's how you learn about what's the art of the possible. What can industry actually do?
Right. It is an attempt to gain a competitive advantage, but it also helps the government find the best value solutions available. What's out there? Sometimes the government ends up writing requirements with blinders on. They basically copy what they bought last time or what they know well. New solutions may be available they would never be able to acquire unless contractors gave them information. And yes, that information is going to be biased towards that contractor's solution, that shaping.
And a lot of times when I was putting together a recompetition, I'm obviously going to go back and pull up the statement of work from last time. I'm going to pull up the whole acquisition plan from last time. And without having my mind be open to shaping as a CO, which in my early career I was not, you end up copy and pasting maybe too much of it. You know, maybe industry has changed. Maybe the acquisition strategy has changed. Maybe the economy has changed. The shaping is how you find all that out.
Where it crosses the line is when the government accepts shaping accepts statement of work recommendations from a contractor that are very biased towards that contractor's solution and essentially cuts and pastes those recommendations into the RFP, makes those their statement of work. You don't really have to worry about that on the government side, though.
Yeah, it's self-policing because there's this thing called a protest. If you see an RFP, if the requirement is so specific that literally only one company can do it, that's called an unduly restrictive requirement. And people are going to raise a flag and say, hey, no one else but this company can do it because you required a patent for this thing that isn't actually required to do the work. I've seen that too. I did that by accident. I didn't realize it was patented until I put it out in the RFP.
Right. If you go too far, industry will let you know when you release the RFP or when you release the draft RFP. They'll say, hey, no way. This is completely unfair. And if you don't make it more fair, they're going to protest and your whole acquisition is derailed for a time.
There's a case for shaping. If you're the government, you actually want that shaping. Because if you don't realize that you've been shaped by one company and you put out a requirement that's too specific, you're going to end up with a protest. And that's actually a lot more work than just doing the shaping ahead of time. So
right.
It actually makes sense to spend the time now to understand what can industry do, put together a requirement that's actually competitive, and avoid the protest. And you'll save time and headaches by doing it right the first time. Just saying, because I've done it wrong.
Me too. From the industry side, you need to understand that shaping is how you win. For large competitions, if you're not shaping, you might want to consider dropping out of the competition or joining another team, because your competition is shaping.
And this isn't just for large competitions. We help customers win like $500,000, $5 million contracts using this process. I mean, shaping should be happening all the time, because once you target, that's, you know, we talk about targeting all the time. Once you've targeted, then the next step is the shaping process for an individual opportunity. And regardless of the dollar value, you should be doing it proportionate to, you know, the size of the contract.
Exactly. It's like we talk about, there's always a little bit of relationship, even in the most process-driven acquisitions, there's always a little relationship. The Ask a Contracting Officer Forum question that we're trying to answer here with this podcast is, where's the line? When have I gone too far on the industry side? I think you'll find the line. You'll know this when the government won't accept any more meetings and doesn't answer your emails or your phone calls anymore. You can provide all the information you want. They can ignore as much of it as they want. The real danger is when contractors have crossed that line and the government stops listening because they're annoyed or overwhelmed or they think it's too biased. Because then we lose communication and that context that the government needs. Most contractors are wary about crossing the line and look to provide real value with their input. And they have an eye on blatant favoritism that would offend the government. They try not to provide inputs that say, you should only buy from us. But they try to include that you should only buy from us in the kind of the subtext, like, the thoughts behind it. It's always there, right? That's what competition is all about.
This is a great example of, if you don't realize the competition is happening before the RFP drops and before those proposals are submitted, you're behind the curve. Because this how you do this shaping, how much you can do, and, you know, back to the original question, is there a line where I can disqualify myself? Outside of FAR 9.5, okay, that's the wall you can cross, but you could disqualify yourself by the annoyance level, where you've shown them so much information, they're like, they're just a marketing company. They don't actually have a solution.
Right.
To us. So you end up with, you know, kind of putting yourself backwards. What did you call it? Like dis-shaping?
You could bias them against you with poor shaping attempts. Like if you start to anger them and then they decide that you're just all marketing, that's bad. All right, Kevin, let's wrap this up.
So on the government side, industry wants to be part of the journey. They want to shape. Let them. I mean, avoid unnecessary awkwardness and just tell them up front, we're taking input from all places. And let's be clear that the requirement may be influenced by, but will not be directed by, a potential bidder. I wish I'd been as eloquent to say that in my RFIs back then. But that's really what you're doing is it is okay to talk to people. It is okay to take their input. It is okay to take even pieces of their capability or their solution and put them into the actual requirement, because you know that will solve what the customer needs. What's not okay is to have them help you write that into the requirement and then go ahead and bid on it. And that's a whole different thing. on the industry side, don't be surprised when the government bristles at this shaping thing, because it feels like you're trying to tell me what to do. Well, you kind of are, but that's sales. That's part of the process. As a buyer, I should be open to getting input from industry. That annoyance thing you talked about, Paul, that's personal. That's the relationship part. How much of that selling am I willing to tolerate? Is that the right word?
Right.
During the shaping process.
At some point, it feels kind of slimy. And that's not a good way to shape the requirements, to make the government feel uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, and the big takeaway from this is if you target and you know their requirement and you know their agency and you know this is very, very likely what they want to solve, and you know that your solution is very likely going to be something they can use, they're more likely to listen. It's when you're just shaping for the sake of shaping, that's called like spam, like the email you get from everybody under the sun. That's what irritates people. That's what you don't want to do.
So untargeted shaping is spam. Yes.
That's the quote of the day right there.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say for the industry folks is shaping is how you win. For the government folks, there's nothing wrong with shaping. In fact, it's usually very beneficial. Organizational conflicts of interest are unfair. Shaping is not. And like we talked about, there's a wall between when there's a conflict of interest and when there's not. There's no explicit line that you can cross for when there's too much shaping going on, because the government will simply stop listening to the input. And with that, I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode. If you need help understanding the limitations of shaping, visit askskyway.com to learn how Skyway Acquisition can help. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.